Welcome to the Immigrant Stories program. I'm Walter Gallagher, and my interview today is with Diana Higuera, Executive Director and co-founder of the Rocky Mountain Welcome Center, an immigrant-led nonprofit organization in Denver, dedicated to assisting immigrants and refugees and local community members as they work towards cultural understanding, acceptance, and community integration. Diana came from Venezuela as a master's degree student in international and intercultural communication at Denver University in 2005. She had every intention of returning home to Venezuela after 2 years, but she met her husband and fell in love, and she's made the United States her home ever since. Almost since her first day on campus, Diana has devoted herself to building stronger communities through cultural understanding and cooperation. Diana Higuera, thanks for joining me for Immigrant Stories.
Oh, thank you for inviting me.
You've spent almost 20 years helping immigrants adjust to their new and strange land. I want to talk about that more, but I want to take you back. I want to hear your origin story. Tell me what it was like for you as a little girl growing up in Venezuela.
Venezuela was a very affluent country in the time when I was growing up. So it was great. It was, I went to private schools. We have help at the house. So it was all the things that I don't have access here that I missed that part. Also, Venezuela, it's a beautiful land. So going to the beach every weekend and traveling within Venezuela and going around, it was a very good, happy, healthy upbringing.
What were your parents like?
My parents are both architects. Huh. So they had their own hours of working. And so my mom was working during the day when we were at school, and then she'll pick us up and then going to do different activities, sports and all that. So it was also a very full schedule of doing things during the day.
So your family was fairly well to do, and you had a good and rich life.
Yeah, my family was. I mean, we were not millionaires or anything, but we had enough to do our activities and do everything we needed. Yes.
So who were the people in your life, your North Stars, the people who, when you look back, guided you?
Definitely my family. My dad was also a volunteer firefighter since he was in college. He founded the firefighter at his university. And until this day, my dad is 84, and until this day, he's still doing things for firefighters. That's his passion, and wow. I always saw him doing things for them and being very active civically and engaging with population. So,
what about your mom?
My mom was all the time with us. She was more, so she would work as an architect with my dad, but she was the one in the afternoon staying with us and doing activities with us. So I also see that it is hard because you want to be that for your kids, and sometimes you can't be all of it. So it is hard to have that to have that balance between work and life, right? So,
yeah, I suppose now you're looking back and really appreciating what she did.
Absolutely,
to keep the
you don't appreciate it when you're growing up, but right. Now I do. I do appreciate it.
Is your mom still alive?
She's still alive. They were back in Venezuela until February. In February, they moved to Spain. Huh. And my brother lives in Spain, and that has been a hard transition for all of us. Especially I feel that they were the last link I had to Venezuela. All my cousins are out of the country. Some of my aunts are still there, and my uncles. But having them move out, it make it real that, you know, that was the last link. So I went to Venezuela in February to help them move, that was my visit. I haven't been in Venezuela since the last 14 years, so it was...
What was that like for you to see
your neighborhood and home? It looked way better than when I left. Safer. Last time I went, you couldn't speak on the phone outside, like on your cell phone, because someone will steal your phone from your hand and run away. Huh. And I didn't see that. I saw people were like in peace and happy and everything clean. Of course, it's electoral year, so everything is clean and organized, and you see a lot of movement and people working. But it was way better than when I was there last time. It felt less stress in the environment. Everything was super expensive. I don't know how people are doing it. I feel that there are the people that are left there that are professionals, they're in a bubble where they can't afford to pay everything that is so expensive. It's more expensive than here. And then there is the rest of the people that are still eating from the garbage because they don't have enough income to eat. And then, you know, you see the reality of things like schools, public schools, for example. Teachers make less money than what it costs them on transportation to go to school. So that reality of our kids having huge gaps in education because school meets twice a week, because of that, it hits hard home. So
if you're just joining us, you're listening to the Immigrant Stories program. Diana Higuera, executive director of the Rocky Mountain Welcome Center, is describing her first visit to her home country, Venezuela, in 14 years. She has returned to move her parents to Spain. When did you start seeing that change in your country?
For better, you mean?
No, when things started to go...
To go worse?
Yeah.
I will say after Chavez won, like maybe 10 years after... democracy, we have elections every 5 years, and he perpetrated his staying. You couldn't, in Venezuela, before Chavez, the president could not stay in presidency for two consecutive terms. They have to go out and then make it, and he changed that, so he stayed in presidency. And at the beginning, he made a lot of changes. I mean, he won democratically and for a reason. People wanted a change. Uh-huh. People were tired of corruption and tired, and he said all what people wanted to hear, right?
He wasn't going to be the dictator that Venezuela...
He was not. He was going to be the hope for the poor, and he was going to take money out of the rich and give it to the poor, and he started taking big companies out, so big industries that were private at some point and give it to the workers. But what do the workers know about running a company? Nothing.
Right. He wasn't organized. He wanted to nationalize everything and give it to people, but he didn't have a plan, right?
And people, the plan was get cooperatives and give it to the people. But the problem is, what do they know about marketing? What do they know about? Right. So those companies that were very well up and running and very good companies giving profits, in a year they will bankrupt because the people didn't know how to run them. And little by little, all the industries were down. So at some point, there was no industries left. We were the country where headquarters for all Latin America we had in Caracas. And I used to work for Procter & Gamble Latin America. And that was one of the first companies that went out of the country. So all the big companies went out. All the local companies were run down because of the people didn't know how to manage them. And at some point, the oil industry, he changed all these PhD people that the government form outside the country and were specialized in oil, they were fired. He brought military to run that. What do they know about oil? Nothing.
90% of the exports in Venezuela was oil.
Exactly. So we're all dependent country, and now Venezuela being one of the richest countries in the world with oil. We have the largest proven reserve of oil in the world. And now we're importing gas because they ruin the industry.
The refineries are old and in the way. And
once you dig you spoil that
drilling hole.
Yeah, that you can't do anymore in there and you have to go somewhere else. So he had swallowed a lot of all those oil parts of the country or oil is heavy oil. If you don't have all that development that we had at some point to develop all the techniques for the oil and refine all that heavy oil, you don't have a market if you don't continue with that. Venezuela was one of the countries that created the OPEC. So
sitting on all these riches, but you can't get to them because the government has squandered.
Yeah, and because of all the corruption that comes with it.
Yes.
So unfortunately, I think that once they go out, and I say once because we say there is no hay mal que dure mil años. There is not such a bad thing that will last for 1,000 years, hopefully, once they are out. Then we will see how much is the damage, the real damage.
Yeah. So this recent migration from Venezuela, what do you attribute that to? I mean, there's been a mass migration going on for years.
Yeah. It came in waves, right? So the first wave were all the professionals that had the means to get out. But at some point, we didn't have, the country didn't have food. So you will go to the supermarkets and supermarkets were empty. People were hungry. You see people eating from the garbage. The economy has the highest inflation in the world. At some point, the inflation of Venezuela was 1 million. Can you believe 1 million? You go to the supermarket and you buy something, 5 minutes later is more expensive than what you bought it. So that make it very hard for people to survive, to the point where people start going out walking to countries at the beginning, Colombia, that is our neighbor, and Colombia has been great trying to accommodate Venezuelans, but right now it's just too many. And then going down, people start going down, walking to Peru, to Chile, to Ecuador, to, you know, Argentina.
Yeah. And millions of people have left and gone to those countries.
And if you see, it's like a line of people just walking in the edge of the street going down. And with kids and families, complete families, and they start coming north, right? Coming through the jungle from between Colombia and Panama and going up, walking to the U.S., to, you know, the promised land where everything. And they come here and they see that it's not as promised as they thought it was, and it's not as easy as people think. And especially when people start arriving in Denver and it was winter and they had to be outside camping and sleeping outdoors, it was not easy. And now we have a lot of people that are trapped because they don't have passports. They came walking. They don't have passports or IDs, or they lost the IDs in the, you know, 2 months, 3 months that it took them to get here. And now they want to go back and they don't want to go through the jungle again because that was traumatizing. So the journey coming up was traumatizing. They don't want the journey going down as traumatizing as it was. So there is a lot of people that feel that they're trapped here, that they can't go back home, and they have to make it. But when there are so many, it's hard to accommodate so many.
Right.
Like if we have already problems with our own population, how are we going to do to help everybody else that are coming? It's very hard.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to the Immigrant Stories program. Diana Higuera, Executive Director of the Rocky Mountain Welcome Center, has just explained why millions of people have fled and are fleeing her homeland, Venezuela. The years of autocratic rule and deep corruption have led to mass starvation and hopeless poverty.
You went back to help your parents move. Mm-hmm. That must have been a really difficult journey for you particularly for them at their age to leave their
It was very hard. They knew that it was time because my brother's not there, I'm not there. And if something happened to one of them, the other is not going to be able just to take care of the spouse. So they knew that this time they needed to get out of the country. But it's hard because in Venezuela right now, nothing sells. So they have their main house that is going to sell for a tenth of the value of the house. But they are in the same street. There are maybe other six or seven houses that are being sold. So they left and they couldn't sell the house. And they left, they couldn't sell the things that were inside the house. They decided that they were going to move with four luggages. That's it. The rest stays. And, you know, getting rid of all your things. My mom was very good about it. I was less good about it. It was...
You still had attachment to that home and those things, those sacred things that were part of you and part of your childhood.
Yeah. And it's not the value of, you know, like I have this pair of glasses and it's what's like, I had a pair of glasses when I went to the beach and that, you know, like it's just the emotional attachments that we have to things. And my mom was very good about going to in good terms with it and say, these are just things and I don't need them. And, you know, just, you know, sell them whatever, however you can. But they were not selling because people don't have money to buy anything now.
Must have been really difficult to watch your aging parents.
It was
cutting themselves from their country.
It was very hard to leave the house. To leave the house where they have been living the last 40 years, 50 years, you know. So, but they're okay. They're good. They're better. They're better in Spain because everything works.
See, there you go. You're making lemonade out of those lemons.
It's emotional, but I know that when you see back, Venezuela is a failed country. And a failed country is failing in every little sense, right? So the healthcare is not there. And it's not there sometimes, not because you don't have the doctors, that most of them are out of the country, but also you don't have the medicine sometimes that you need. Or you don't have the money to pay for it because you have an insurance that my parents have to pay in dollars, but they pay you in bolivares, the currency, the local currency, and they pay you 2-3 months back. And sometimes they don't pay you. So if you really have an emergency that is a hard emergency, you don't have the healthcare you need. So those are the times when you decide, now I need to leave. Because my dad is 84. And, you know, at 84, he's in good health. But how long is he going to be in good health? You don't know.
So you had to go through that emotional journey and return back to the United States and greet Venezuelans who are coming.
Well, you know, my work puts life in perspective.
I would say yes.
Right? So you give importance to what it is important. My parents are good, are in good health. I'm seeing people every day with kids that don't have anywhere to sleep, that don't have food to eat. Yeah. That, so my parents are good. My life is good. When my kids say, I don't know, anytime they say something about, I don't want to do this, well, you know, you have the opportunity to do it, you'll be happy because you do have the opportunity to do that.
I don't want to eat kids. That.
Exactly.
No, you're going to eat that.
Exactly. It reminds me of my grandparents. My grandparents, from my mom's side, were Spanish. And my dad lived the war. So every time we will not eat something on the plate, my grandfather will say, in war, we didn't have anything to... Well, that's how I sound. There's so many kids that I see that don't have anything to eat. You eat that.
Yes.
And so, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, everything... I think that's a positive thing of my work, that puts life in a real good perspective. So I don't complain. It's good.
But it's overwhelming, that the need.
It is overwhelming.
Describe that if you can.
Of the need of people I see. you know, everybody I see right now with a migrant. So we see a lot of different populations.
Right.
So lately, what I see are migrants, and the migrants are coming from the southern border that are mostly Venezuelans, my compatriots. They just want to work. They just want to be able to have visa that gives them the opportunity to work and to have a better life. And they have a lot of traumas because coming through that jungle and going, they said that the worst part is not even going through the jungle, that the worst part is waiting in Mexico to be able to come in.
Where you're really vulnerable.
Because all the kidnappings and all, so a lot of things happen in that journey, right? They get robbed like 10 times, they get kidnapped several times, the women get raped and the men too. I mean, it is a hard, hard journey. But every family I have asked if it's worth it, they said yes.
Wow.
So I cannot imagine the need that they had in Venezuela, because some of them are not coming. They don't have a case for political asylum. No one is persecuting them in Venezuela.
Right.
But they have a hardship. They didn't have enough to eat. So when a mother tells you that at least they're eating here two or three times a day, and it's worth it because of that, that is a really eye-opening moment.
When you have basic things.
When you
have food and
exactly.
You may have a roof over your head.
And when they have come, if you think about it, they come walking. Let's say a family with three or four kids walking through the jungle, walking everywhere. It took them maybe 3 or 4 months to get here, maybe a year, depends on where they were. And they are used to sleeping in the streets. So for me, that will be super hard to just sleep in the streets with my kids. And yeah. So having them coming up and saying that that was not the hardest part, that at least they're eating. I can't imagine going to bed and my kid asking me, "Mommy, I'm hungry," and you don't have anything to give them. I can't. So, you know, every situation is different. Before Venezuelans, we had the Afghans coming, and then their stories were very different. They were grieving their homes because they have to leave with whatever they had on and see if they could leave before they were killed. So their grief was different.
So they were refugees. Do you make the distinction between immigrants and...
It is a huge distinction of how they come because of the help they get. So if you are a refugee, you will have your paperwork done when you come, and you have a refugee agency is waiting for you, and you will have a place to stay. But also expectations are very different, right? So we don't know what they were told in the camp before coming. So a lot of them expect the movie, and not a very small apartment in Colfax, right? So it's very different, the expectations of what they get. And that feeling of not knowing where you are, because you get there, but the process is not as fast as you think it's going to be. So while they get their food stamps and all that, it takes a little bit. And the expectations of having to know the language in you know, 6 months or whatever time frame that they give to have to be able to work. It's hard. And also, they also want to work. They also want to be assets to the community. One of the things that in my work I see is that every immigrant, no matter how they come, they want to give back. They want to be assets to their communities, and they want to give back. So when I give a clothing to a family that have a little baby, and when they have the opportunity, they come and they bring me clothing for the next family. And they could have sold that clothes, but no, they come and give it back because they want to give back to the people, to the community that helped them. And that is something that I see over and over. Immigrants don't want everything given to them. They want to earn their things. They want to be assets. They want to be important for the communities where they live.
They want to belong.
They want they don't want charity. They don't want to be a charity. They want to be part of the community. And if they are, everything is given to them, they're charity. They're not part of the community.
Well, and they've come from damaged and broken communities. So part of it is they want to build, they want to be part of building a better community or a community.
Exactly.
That they
didn't
have.
One of the things that people don't realize is that if you see statistics, communities where they have high amount of immigrants are safer communities. Because these people that come here, they can't fail. They don't have anywhere to go back. It's not that they come for vacations and then they go back. No, they can't go back. So they need to be successful. And they're going to do everything in their power that they can to work and be successful and to create community.
It must be crazy for you doing what you do and knowing who you know in these communities, to hear people talking about immigrants as if they were just freeloaders. And
I feel that is a matter of education. And people that speak that way is because they have never had the opportunity to be close to an immigrant.
Right.
So then they just create an image of what they hear. And sometimes this is just not true.
That was Diana Higuera, founder and executive director of the Rocky Mountain Welcome Center. If you would like to learn more about the center and its programs, or if you'd like to donate or volunteer, please go to rockymountainwelcome.org. The need is great. You've been listening to the Immigrant Stories program. If you would like to hear other stories, you can go to immigrantstories.net. You can also find us on Facebook or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.